Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hi folks, I'm Jelaine Fenner and welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. And today I have the garden guy, Gary Heilig.
Hello.
And we are talking in December for this program, even though we're recording this before December. But we're going to be talking about things that we might should be doing, what we could be doing for our garden friends and family. And anyways, December, most of us don't think much about gardening in December, do we, Gary?
I think about gardening 12 months out of the year.
Yeah, that's right. That's because you're special. That's right. And people that are serious gardeners, you're right. You're always looking forward to getting those catalogs in the mail for the new season.
And they finally started getting them out a number of years ago before Christmas.
Yes.
It used to be they came in January.
Right, that's right. But now they've gotten smart because then those garden lovers maybe can get Christmas presents.
Oh, yeah, and that's one of the things we'll talk about
today. That's right. Well, Gary, why don't you have a word of prayer for us?
Our Heavenly Father, we thank you for December, the holiday season where we recognize your birth.
Amen.
We're thankful that you allow us to be able to be on the radio to serve people by giving them information about gardening. But most of all, we're thankful for Strong Tower Radio because they give people information about salvation.
Amen.
We pray that you'll bless this program and watch over all those who are listening. In Jesus' name we pray.
Amen. Amen. Okay, well, December, first off, we always think about the holiday season and poinsettias. Now, poinsettias start coming out in November, getting ready for December.
They're growing right now in the greenhouses waiting for people. And it's an interesting little plant. I did a video, I think it was last year, on poinsettias, and I learned quite a bit about them. It's a plant that's native to Central America, but it grows really well down in southern Mexico.
Now, I heard it was a weed that grew.
Well, it's actually a shrub, and it naturally turns the red as the lighting changes.
Mm-hmm.
But it was used by the Aztecs, and they used it for things, not for Christmas, but they got dyes from it. And also it was used for medicinal purposes. The latex in it was used to control fevers. So
now is this the leaves after they turn red or?
Yeah, and actually they're different colors that they turn, but they actually used to get kind of a purplish dye from the poinsettias that grew down there. And also they would use that dye in textiles and cosmetics and those types of things. But it came to be a Christmas plant as a result of a guy named Robert Poinsett, who lived in the 1700s to 1800s. And basically, he was a guy that was the first ambassador to Mexico under President Madison. And he was very much interested in botany and horticulture and those types of things. And he was the one that actually brought it back to the United States.
Well, what was it called, though? It wasn't called poinsettias.
I can't pronounce the word.
Okay.
It's an Aztec word.
I see.
I can spell it for you.
Okay.
It's C-U-E-T-L-A-X-O-C-H-I-T-L.
So, because his
name— I'm not even going to try to pronounce that.
But his name was Poinsett?
His name was Poinsett, and that's where the word poinsettia came from.
Okay.
And it wasn't used until, 1800s in terms of that name. And there was another guy that actually started using it as an ornamental plant.
Mm.
And he was a friend of Mr. Poinsett. And what he did when he came back is he sent this samples of this plant to a lot of different people. And they were quite interested in it. But this one guy, I don't remember his name. I think it was Buist. And he was the one that actually got the plant as an ornamental. But from that little humble beginning, it's now the number one potted plant in the United States, and it accounts for like 23% of all potted plants sold.
Oh, I believe it.
And the majority of those come out of California.
Well, that's why you said they're growing in the greenhouses. They
right,
get them ready for the holiday season.
When I was on campus filming some videos, I went through the greenhouses, and I think it was about a month ago, The poinsettias were only about 2 to 3 inches high. So they get them started like July, early August to have them ready for Christmas.
So they, because you can get small plants and then you can get really big plants. Mm-hmm. It just depends.
Yeah, they can get, they'll have little individual single plants and then they'll have grouped in usually odd numbered groups like threes and fives. Mm-hmm. And depending on the size of the pot will determine how large the plant will get. But they have the traditional red, and then they also come in pink and white and yellow, variegated pink and white, salmon, solid white, and then they have new cultivars coming out all the time. And then they will have some, you might see a purple one or other colors, and those are usually painted.
Well, I was going to say blue. I've seen in the last couple of years, I've seen some beautiful. They're beautiful blue, but
they're painted.
So what are they, probably white ones that they paint blue maybe?
Most likely they are white because it wouldn't work out too well if you were using red or some of the other colors.
It would be turned purple, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Blue, yeah. Huh. So how, do you know the story then how we got them, though, for Christmas?
Well, it's because of its color.
The red.
The red color and, you know, red and green and white, mm-hmm. those are all colors of Christmas. And over time, it just, people... started using it. One of the reasons is because it started producing the brack color right around the holiday season. Mm-hmm. So what they do, when I used to work in the teaching greenhouses on campus, in the evening before we went home, we used what they call shade cloth. And we would cover over all the poinsettias at 5 o'clock and they would stay that way until 8. So that's about 15 hours of darkness. So when the days get shorter and the nights get longer, that's what triggers a poinsettia to flower. Now, what you see, those red colored leaves, those aren't the flowers. Those are called bracts, and those are modified leaves. The flower is a little yellow structure in the middle of the plant, not that attractive. I mean, most people wouldn't even notice it.
Well, that's what I've seen. They're just little tiny, like round in the middle.
Yeah.
So what we see that is the red is the leaves.
It's a modified leaf called a bract.
Okay. But then they also have green leaves.
Yes, they do. That's why it's a modified leaf, because it's a little different than the regular leaves. But the other thing is they're so sensitive that if, say, for instance, we didn't have them covered and somebody came by in a car and they're just exposed to a couple of minutes of light from a car light, it'll set them back in terms of how long it'll take for them to flower.
So now when you're talking about they've been growing in the greenhouse, mm-hmm. do they have to do that in the greenhouse?
We used to in the old teaching greenhouses because people were coming and going all the time, the day or night. But in the new teaching greenhouses, there's no way that you can get artificial light in there because they're way away from parking lots and things. So as the light levels start to change, then they're triggered to flower.
Okay, because I know I've heard and I've tried, but it's because sometimes they're just beautiful plants and, you know, you keep them. But then they say coming near the fall of the next year, you're supposed to put them in like a closet so they don't get any light. Mm-hmm. So how do you do that to make sure to try to get them to grow again?
Well, assuming that you have a plant that you have kept in pretty good shape, because normally if you set them outside during the summer, they'll grow and look very nice. You might have to do some pruning, which is a whole nother discussion. But once they're ready to start getting them to produce, which is about mid-October is when we start to put them in the darkness around 5 and then take them out at 8 o'clock. So when you come home from work, put it in the closet or some dark place where it won't get any light. And then before you go to work, take them out.
Okay.
And you do this until you start to see the first color start to form on the bracts or the leaves at the top. They start to show that red tinge. After that, you don't have to put them in the closet anymore. They'll continue the process without any further initiation.
So that's just getting them used to the darkness for a while. And then once you start seeing that there's color coming into it.
Well, there's a lot of physiology involved in it, but basically you trigger them to start to produce the red color in the bracts. And once that's started, then light doesn't have any factor anymore.
Okay. Well, I love poinsettias. I think they're just beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And if a person's going to buy a poinsettia, if you want it to last the longest, and most of them last quite a while, the secret to finding out if it's a fresh poinsettia is the flowers itself. So if you have a poinsettia where the flowers are already falling off, that's an old poinsettia. Mm. What the ones you want to get are flowers that are just beginning to show the stamens, which is the male part of the flower. And on those stamens, you'll see a little yellow pollen. So I like to get the ones before the stamen even comes out because I know that it's got a lot of life after that.
Okay.
You also have to remember when you're buying poinsettias, they are very brittle plants and you can break the stems extremely easily. So you have to be very careful with them and they do not like cold drafts. So when you buy a poinsettia, you want to make sure that it's wrapped and you're taking it to a warm car. And it's going to stay in a warm car because if you're, say, shopping and you're turning off the motor and it gets really cold, you're not going to be happy with what happens to the poinsettia.
So then if you're going to be shopping or you go shopping and you buy one, you want to take it home. You don't want
right.
to continue
or buy shopping. Or make that your last stop.
Yeah.
You don't want them to sit in a cold car for very long.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about Christmas trees. And then there's real trees and there's fake trees.
Yeah, I'm currently working on a video on that right now. I'm editing it this time. And, you know, people talk about different aspects of real trees versus fake trees. And first thing I'll talk about real trees. There are a lot of positive things about real trees. My son used to fuss about the fact that, oh, you cut them down, that's bad for the environment. But if it wasn't for the Christmas trees, if they weren't grown for that reason, they wouldn't be grown at all. So when you think of an acre of Christmas trees, it produces enough oxygen every day for 17 to 18 people. Mm. So that's a positive. Also, it gives cover for animals. There are various birds that will go into the trees for cover. Some birds will actually nest in the trees. Gives cover for little guys that are on the low end of the food chain, like rabbits. Mm. And they make the land more valuable because when you have a crop on that land, it's going to be more valuable. And also, usually when they go out of business, they don't cut down all the trees. They become very large trees. Mm-hmm. So you have all these different nice ornamental trees there. And some of them will be sold for landscape. So there's lots of different ways that's beneficial. They also sequester carbon as they grow. Now, of course, when you cut it down and chop it up and those types of things, that carbon's released again. But at least for a while, that carbon is sequestered. And the Christmas tree industry is responsible for about 100,000 jobs nationally, both part and full-time jobs. So there's a lot of positives to having a real Christmas tree. And I probably haven't even named all of them. Also, they can be recycled and reused for other things. And I did a video on that too, recycling Christmas trees. Now, some of the downsides are, if you don't take care of it properly, it can become a fire hazard in the house. You do have needle issues that they will drop some needles, but, you know, vacuum cleaners deal with that. Another thing about them is some people might have allergies to the trees. My sister-in-law can't have a real tree because she has allergies. And the allergy could be to the tree itself, or it could be to the mold, spores, or those types of things that invariably will be on a real tree.
And but there's a variety of, you know, there's blue spruce. You know this. I don't know them all, but there's there's all different kinds. Because blue spruce is just really small needles, which I've never really liked.
I like blue spruce. It's a beautiful tree when it's decorated, but it punishes you in the decorating process.
Yeah.
Because they're short.
And sharp.
Sharp needles, and they hurt.
Yeah.
So you basically almost have to have gloves on to cut that thing down if you're going out to a U-cut and decorating it.
Right. And there's, Douglas fir, there's a variety of different types of
trees. There's grand fir, there's noble fir, there's Fraser fir, there's balsam fir, there's Canaan fir. There may be some other exotics out there that people are trying. There's Douglas fir, Scotch pine, which used to be the standard tree in Michigan. Yeah,
right.
But it's kind of fallen out of favor because they don't have straight trunks. And they some of the cultivars will tend to turn a little yellow as it gets colder, which is the chlorophyll breaking down in the leaves. So they end up having to treat those. They actually spray them with a green paint
Well, usually that's I thought that's what they do almost always, no. These Christmas Mm-mm. tree farms.
Not the firs. The true firs tend to be very straight and dark in their colors, and those are like the Cadillac of the trees. There's okay. also concolor fir, blue spruce, white spruce, Norway spruce, and then you go to other states, and then they have other species. For instance, some of the cedars and different things. Virginia pine, white pine. There's a lot of different ones that are used.
So if I have a fake tree, I'll just admit it right now, and I've had it for probably 25 years. And most people, if they didn't know it was fake, they wouldn't realize it was. I mean, it was even though it's that old, I spent a lot of money way back then mm-hmm. on getting something that didn't look fake, but it's lasted me for a long time. And the main reason is because of the needles falling. I was sick of March still vacuuming up needles.
Well, and a lot of times people will buy trees from lots mm-hmm. or from stores and things like that. Boy Scouts might be selling them. Mm-hmm. And many of those trees are cut in October.
Right, early.
So they tend to dry out faster. But if you go out to a choose and cut and you cut your tree, say, around Thanksgiving, you're not going to have much of a needle problem. And one of the things that they do when you buy them at a choose and cut farm is they have a machine called a shaker.
Oh.
And it shakes all the extra needles and stuff off. So they're pretty clean when you get it. And then when you get it home, if you take care of it like you're supposed to, which would be you cut off another half inch when you get it home, put it directly in the stand, and keep it watered. And you might have to water twice the first couple of days. And then after that, water once a day. Then you can have that tree in the January, and it still won't have dropped very many needles at all.
Because that's because you cut it fresh.
It's a fresh tree, so there's a difference.
Yeah, when you buy them from the stores or lots, usually, like you said, I mean, we live up here in Wexford County. I live right across the street.
Oh, it's a big area for
from,
growing
you know, a Christmas tree. And, yeah, October, they start cutting the trees down.
Yeah, and they just have to do that in order to get them into the system.
Right.
But artificial trees have their pros too. You mentioned one, you don't have to buy a tree yearly, because when you buy a tree, they charge by the foot and by the species. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to buy, say, a 7 to 8 foot Fraser fir, that's going to set you back $70. Now, you can buy artificial trees as low as $40. They don't look very good, but
pretty sparse looking.
Yeah, but some of the top of the line, the ones that are starting to look really good, they're around $400.
Right, they're expensive.
And you're going to really invest. But, I mean, if you bought a $70 tree, it'll take you about 5 or 6 years to get that investment back.
Yeah.
But a lot of the artificial trees are made from the same stuff that they use, PVC, polyvinyl chloride, and they're all made in China. And China does not have the same environmental laws that we do. Right. So from an environmental standpoint, a natural tree is better.
I see.
So, but if you have allergies, you may not have a choice, because you won't have a problem with an artificial tree. An artificial tree generally won't be a fire hazard as long as you check to make sure it's fire resistant. That may not always mm-hmm. be the case, but you want to mm-hmm. be sure of that. But the artificial tree business is really taken off. It's a $1 billion business now, and it's approaching about the same level that they are natural trees. But the millennials want real trees.
Right, yeah, coming back to or
yes,
buying
coming
a,
back to the
coming
real trees.
Back buying a tree that's in a pot.
Yeah, know, that's called a living tree.
Yeah.
And that's another option. A lot of the U-cut farms will have some limited number of living trees. And the idea behind that is that when you finish with it, you can plant it.
Right.
That is true as long as you don't have the tree in the house for very long.
Okay.
So if you have it in the house for about a week, which most people like to have them longer than that, when it starts to break bud and then you take it outside, you kill those buds. And the problem is the way ornamental trees grow, or I should say Christmas trees, they have one bud for the season. If that one's killed, no growth for that season.
Okay.
After 3 years, you lose your needles, so your tree can die.
So if you want to have the living tree that you buy in a pot, mm-hmm. you don't buy it way before Christmas. And
well, you can buy it. You just don't. You don't bring it into the house until the week of Christmas.
Okay.
And then you take it out immediately after that. And you might even be able to plant it still.
Depending.
Because if the ground's not frozen, which, you know, there are years that we've had Christmas the last couple.
No snow. That's right.
And the ground's not frozen, so you can get it out there.
Okay. All right, well, folks, we've got to take a quick break, but stay tuned because we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about Christmas trees, plus many other things for December.
Mm-hmm. Joe Cruz was given the gift of preaching straight, no-nonsense sermons that would melt your heart and lead you to Calvary. And now you can listen to Joe weekdays at 5:30 a.m. and 3 p.m. right here on Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Hi, folks. I'm Jelaine Fenner, and welcome back to Strong Tower Radio today. And we have Gary Heilig.
Ho, ho, ho.
Our Christmas guy. And we are talking, our Christmas guy, our garden guy, but it is December.
I threw you off there, didn't I?
Yes, that's right. It is December and Christmas time. And there's lots of things we can talk about regarding, you know, our gardens and what have you. But we were just talking about Christmas trees, the pros and cons to live, real
versus
trees.
Versus artificial, yeah.
Yep, versus fake Christmas trees, which...
Or you could say natural and artificial.
Oh, there we go, yes. And which I have artificial, and I know my son's like, you know, he was, I don't know, 9 or 10 when I got it, and he's like, why are we doing that? And, but I have really enjoyed having it and can put it up on Thanksgiving and can leave it up until January or whatever.
Do you know how Christmas trees got to the United States?
How?
The Germans.
So, well, didn't we have, well, I guess Christmas trees, but, I mean, there were pines growing.
Yeah, the tradition of Christmas trees started in Germany.
Oh, okay.
And, of course, they used to put candles on their trees, which seems really dangerous.
Yes.
But it's a tradition that the Germans brought over, the German immigrants.
Okay, for Christmas trees. All right. Well, so if you... Especially if you have a real Christmas tree, I mean, one that was either live that's planted, which you said are called live trees, or one that's been cut, whether you cut it yourself or you bought it from a lot, what exactly do you have to do? We talked just briefly about watering and what do we have to do for our Christmas tree, a real Christmas tree?
In terms of care?
Yes.
Well, as I said, if you were to cut a tree... Or even if it comes from a lot, what happens is in the process of bringing that tree home, there's resins that will clog up the conductive system, which makes it difficult for that tree to take water up into it. So we usually suggest people cut off at least a half inch of the base just before putting it in the stand. And after that, now there are people that sell materials that make your Christmas tree last longer. You don't need any of that. Basically, water will do it, but the tree will start to pick up water right away. And if you put it in the morning, by afternoon, it might be really low. So you'd never want it to get below the base of the tree. So you may have to water it multiple times during the day, and it will slow down in picking up water as time goes on.
After you've, yeah, because when you first bring it home, who knows when it had any water, especially if it was from a lot.
Yeah.
After you bring it home, you cut some of it off again, so like it's a fresh cut at the bottom.
Right, so it's able to pick up water more efficiently. Mm-hmm. Now, also you have to realize with a natural tree, you might have a spider or something that pops up every now and then. But that's not going to be much of a problem. And all you really need to do is keep the tree well watered until you're finished with it. There's not much other care other than don't place it next to a fireplace or don't put candles too close to it. And when you put lights on it, be sure that they're in good shape. Check them for frayed wires and those types of things.
You don't want any shortages.
That's right, because Christmas trees burn very well.
Well, because they're dry.
Yeah. Well, even if they're not that dry, if you get a good flame going, they have resins in them, and they burn well. Mm-hmm. And even though a Christmas tree doesn't look dry, for instance, if you were to go out and try to light your landscape trees in this time of year, they wouldn't burn very easily. But it would be much easier to burn them in the spring after they've been through a rough winter before they started picking up water, because even though they look okay, they're drier.
I see, okay.
And they'll burn more easily. Now, if you're thinking about going to get a Christmas tree, we mentioned you can go to a lot, which is kind of cool, or, because it reminds me of the Charlie Brown Christmas movie, or you can go to a Choose and Cut farm, and they're all over the state of Michigan. You can go on the internet and find whatever species you want and go there. Many times they will have extra things like wagon rides, or they might have cabins where you can go and get hot chocolate. Mm-hmm. There may be a Santa Claus if you're into that kind
of thing. It's a nice family outing, maybe.
Right, and we started a tradition many years ago with our kids where we'd get up in the morning, we'd take them out to breakfast somewhere. They got to choose where they went. And then we would go someplace in the state. And we went all over the state cutting down Christmas trees. And then back in the days when they really had Christmas movies, we would take the kids to a Christmas movie.
Oh, okay.
But now, the kind of stuff that they release at Christmas, no.
That's right, yeah. Okay, so taking care of Christmas trees, especially the real tree, then after Christmas, recycle. You mentioned that a little bit.
Yeah, that's something you can't do with an artificial tree because the only thing you can do with an artificial tree is donate it to somebody else or give it away, because what happens, they end up in landfills and they're there for thousands of years. But there are a number of different things that you can do. A lot of municipalities have recycling programs. You just have to set it on the side of the road. They will then grind those up and they're used as mulch. Another thing that you could do, and this is what I did with my Christmas tree, is we have a bird feeder in the front yard, and I put a post in the ground, and then I zip-tied the Christmas tree to the post, and it was right next to the bird feeder. So what that allowed was cover for the birds. And say if there was a predator around, like a hawk, they could go right into that tree. Or if the wind was blowing real hard, they could go into the tree. And they'd go back and forth from the feeder. So that can be beneficial. Another thing you could do is if you save your trees every year, you can cut all the branches off and then take the main trunk, especially if you use firs because they have very straight trunks, and you can use that as a pole for pole beans to grow up in your garden.
So recycle.
It's like you could just use it. It's a gift that keeps on giving.
That's right. Okay, well, let's talk about some more Christmas plants. We had already covered about poinsettias because they're the main Christmas plant. But there's other like cactus, you know, Christmas cactus.
Yeah. Christmas cactus, it's kind of hard to describe on the on the radio, but the flowers are these, they're usually pink or red, and they have multiple petals, and they kind of hang off the terminal end of the succulent leaves. And I remember one time somebody called me, and they said they could never get their Christmas cactus to bloom. But they knew somebody that was an older person that theirs bloomed every year.
Okay, so yeah, what's the story?
I was going to ask you, why do you think that is?
Well, I'm not sure what you do.
Well,
because I've had Christmas cactus.
The old lady, the elderly lady, went to bed early. That's a hint.
So dark.
That's right. The lights were turned off, and the same mechanism that would cause the poinsettias to produce the bracts would also cause the Christmas cactus to flower.
Okay.
So, again, you have to have long nights, short days in order to get them to flower. And they can't have all this intermittent lights going on, lights going off. So
then same thing, you might want to stick it in a closet and then take it out?
Or put it in a room that is not people going in and out all the time.
And turning lights on and off.
Right. So once they start to produce the buds, then you can take it out.
So it's the artificial light as well as the regular sunlight.
Any kind of light can do it. It could be turning on lights going through the house or lights shining in from some other source.
Okay.
So if, say for instance, if I had it down in the basement, I have plant lights down in the basement, and I set it to the proper lighting, and my wife goes down there every now and then, but over in the area where I am, I can keep her light from getting over to my area, and it would bloom every year. So, and there's also other things like Norfolk Island pine. People use it as a house plant, but many times you will see it decorated in places.
So it looks kind of like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, it looks like a mini Christmas tree.
Yeah.
But Norfolk Island pine is an actual tree, and they get very large. They grow naturally in Australia and places like that. But if they don't have sufficient light, they start to lose their lower branches. So you might get 1 year out of them, and then after that, you have this long trunk.
I've had that.
And only a few at the top. But if you have good light, then you can keep that plant looking good. But once you lose the lower branches, then putting it outside during the summer won't help. You'll get growth up higher, but it'll never look like it did before.
So, because I've had that before, and they're real soft, the needles.
Mm-hmm. Soft and short.
Yeah. But so if you don't want to lose those bottom, so what do you do? Because I've had that before.
Most likely you're going to have supplemental light during the winter.
Okay.
Like the T5 fluorescent lights or something like that. Otherwise, they'll just do that every time.
And so how much light do they need?
Bright light. It's like four banks of a T5 system, because they're trees that would normally grow outside in full sunlight. And the light in the house is very low compared to that. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have artificial grow lights.
So if you have one of these outside, I mean, we can grow them here in Michigan outside?
Yes, but you can't grow them during the winter. They're not hardy. They can go outside during the summer months.
All right.
And they'll probably take temperatures down to the 40s.
Okay.
So maybe even get in the high 30s. But there are other plants like rosemary, for instance. You'll see rosemary trimmed like Christmas trees, and those will be decorative. That's the same rosemary that people eat.
Okay.
And so you can allow that to grow, even take it outside and put it in your garden.
Okay. So then what about the flowers, the amaryllis?
Amaryllis is a large bulb, and usually when you buy amaryllis around Christmas, they've already gotten it to start to produce its flower. And it'll do whatever it's going to do without you having to do anything. But afterwards, after it's produced all of its flowers and the flowers have died, then the plant needs to rest. And you can take that plant down in the basement, cut back on its watering, and just let it sit there until it starts to grow again.
So you can buy, like, I don't know, you know, you go in the stores and they have these boxes mm-hmm. of the amaryllis, and it's just a bulb.
Yeah, and you basically pot it up, and mm-hmm. The timing is important if you want it to bloom around Christmas. I don't exactly remember the timing, but my guess would be probably starting it around October would get you the flowers by Christmas if you have sufficient light.
Okay, so there again, sufficient light.
Light makes all the difference in the world with a flowering plant. When a plant is going to flower, it's going from its vegetative stage to a reproductive stage, because the purpose of the flower is to produce seeds. And it needs a lot of energy during that time. And plants get their energy from light. They make sugars, and that's what drives the plant.
So, and it doesn't matter if it's artificial or real?
Light is light.
Okay. Because I know I'm thinking when I've had a southern exposure window, the plants do much better.
Yeah, because the intensity of the light is stronger, especially during the winter. Because here in Michigan, if you notice that as we go from summer to winter, during the summer, the sun is high,
right,
almost directly over us. During the winter, it's very low on the horizon.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the further north you go, the lower it gets on the horizon. Mm-hmm. So you get the best light in a south exposure during the winter months.
Okay. So let's go back to talking about the amaryllis. So after Christmas, after it blooms and everything, and it dies, are we supposed to do with it?
Then you take it down to the basement. It has to rest.
Okay.
And you let it die down and just let it rest there. Give it water maybe once a month or so. And when it starts to show a new bud coming up, a leaf bud, then you can bring it back up and start growing it again and watering more regularly and fertilizing.
So how much time do you think after Christmas that is?
Probably about 4 to 6 weeks.
Oh, okay. All right. And then it will bloom.
And that depends on how warm or cold your basement is too.
Okay. But it will grow again and bloom.
Eventually it'll bloom again. But it has to be a certain size in order for it to bloom. And I don't have all the details on that right now. I'd have to go back and look that up.
Okay.
But you can get it to rebloom.
Okay. Are there any other Christmas plants?
Occasionally you will see ivy, and ivy will be put on a trellis in the shape of a wreath, for instance. Mm-hmm. Are there any other plants? I'm sure there are that I'm not remembering right now.
Okay.
But those are the major ones. Cyclamens is another one, which is a plant that prefers cooler weather, because when we were growing it in the greenhouse, we kept that room at about 60 degrees, and the flowers would last longer when you kept it cool. And basically, it has kind of pink, red, or white flowers. They all come up on large single stems, but there'll be multiple stems on those plants, and then you have a flower at the terminal of the stem. They're soft stems. They're not woody at all. And then the leaves are kind of shaped like a violet, but it has variegation in it. You know, that's the advantage of television.
Yeah, that's right. I know, trying to explain.
See, this is what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. Well, everybody can go to YouTube and see some of these things you have on YouTube.
I haven't done anything on Cyclamens yet, but it's only a matter of time.
Okay. All right.
I don't plan on retiring.
Okay. And now you're going to be doing some, you're going to have some videos for Christmas.
Right. I'm working on a video right now on the tree, the trees, artificial versus natural. I'm going to do one on care and safety. A lot of the things we're talking about today will be in videos, and I'm hoping to have all those up before Christmas.
Okay, so folks, you can go to Gary Heilig, H-E-I-L-I-G, on YouTube and look up. How many videos do you have there?
I'm approaching 90 now.
All right.
So, but my goal is to try to put up about 50 a year.
Oh.
And so as long as I live, I will be doing
it. All right. All right. Okay. Well, you know what? Let's take a quick break. And when we're going to come back, we're going to talk about some pruning that might be able to, has to be done, as well as Christmas gifts for gardeners. So stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back.
Strong Tower Radio publishes a monthly newsletter about the ministry's progress and listeners' response. Get the free subscription just by calling 231-468-2087. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
Hi, folks. I'm Jelaine Fenner, and welcome back to Strong Tower Radio today with the garden guy, Gary Heilig.
Hello again.
And we're in December, and we've been talking about all kinds of Christmas things going on. And we talked a lot about Christmas trees, whether real Christmas trees or the fake Christmas trees. But one thing we didn't talk about is if you're going to, whether you're going to choose a tree that's already cut or cut your own. Mm-hmm. How do you decide which tree to get?
Well, for some people, cost might make a difference.
Yep.
For instance, Scotch pine is probably one of the least expensive ones. It used to be the number one tree grown because it grew so quickly. But people don't like trees that don't have straight trunks. It makes it difficult for them to put them in the stands. Mm-hmm. So the true firs have become the preferred tree, like Fraser fir and some of the others that I mentioned earlier. But when I go out to pick a tree, one of the things I want to do is determine how large a tree do I want, because they're going to be charging by the foot. And when you get out on the farm, the trees don't look as large as they actually are.
Yeah, when you bring it home, it might be way bigger than you thought.
Because your ceiling is the sky. Yeah, and so you get it home and you say, oops, and you might have to cut off a foot or more, and you paid for that
That's
foot.
That's right.
So if you're not sure, take a tape measure with you, because the standard room is about 8 feet, and you do have to allow room to cut off a little bit at the bottom and also to put your tree topper on there.
Oh, yeah.
And we were talking about Ernest before, Ernest Saves Christmas, how he was tearing up the house trying to get that big tree inside the house. And another thing that I do is I look at the trunk. So you have to get close to the trees in order to do that. I also look at how it was sheared. Mm-hmm. And certain trees, like white pine, for instance, when they're sheared, they can be fairly thick to where you can only hang, and I see this in Scotch pine sometime too, where you can only hang your decorations on the outside. I like a tree that's open enough so that I can have three-dimensional decorating. Mm-hmm. So I'll have something really close to the trunk and something further out. Another thing that I look for when I look at species is it going to be able to support the weight of the decorations that I have? For instance, one year we bought a white pine, and we have some fairly heavy glass decorations. And when you would put them on the branch, they couldn't support the weight.
The branch bends down.
Because it bends so much. So you need to take that into consideration. When we're also picking a tree, I look at how big the trunk is around the base. Is it going to fit into the holder that I have? Now, one of the things you can do if you have trouble with those types of things at home, is a lot of Christmas tree farms will drill the base of the tree, and they have stands that you can buy that all you have to do is put the tree right where it was drilled, and it's going to be straight up and down, no fuss, no muss. That's some of the things that you get when you go pick your own. Another thing, if I'm going to say a lot, one of the things I'm going to do is take my hand and go toward the middle of the tree and pull it out and see how many needles fall mm-hmm. off. That'll tell you basically how dry the tree is. Another thing that you can do is pick it up and kind of bump it on the ground a little bit, and they will drop right out of there. You can also bend like a Scotch pine or any of the true pines, and if it's dry, the needles will break. You should be able to bend them almost, you know, more than 50 degrees without them snapping. Now, firs will snap. That doesn't mean they're dry. It's just that that's the way they are. Also, another thing that I think about is I want to make sure the tree is going to be balanced when I get it in the house. So I look at the tree from all different angles. And if you go early to pick the trees when you're cutting your own, you're going to get a better choice and you're going to get the best trees. If you're late, then you're going to get some trees that are more lopsided because all the good ones were taken.
Right.
So, and of course, when you go out to cut a tree, there are all these little amenities that you can do, which we talked about, the wagon rides and the campfires mm-hmm. and hot chocolate and stuff. So there are a number of different things you want to look at when you're choosing a tree. And when you go to a choose and cut farm, you don't have to haul it yourself. They usually will put it on a wagon and carry it in for you. They'll put it in what's called a shaker to get all the needles out.
I like that idea.
Oh, yeah. It cleans it up really nicely. So,
but then you still have to put it on the car and bring it home.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Okay. All right. Let's just talk about some pruning. Is there some things that we need to be pruning in December regarding our garden?
Well, I'm always anxious to start pruning my fruit trees because I have 70 apple trees. And I have gotten out there and started pruning the apples and pears that time of year. But what I will do is I only do what I call selective pruning. I'll go out and cut out all of the suckers at the base that are growing up, and also the straight up branches that grow on the side limbs, and we call those water sprouts. I'll cut those off. And then I don't do much else besides that. And I'll do the same thing with the pear trees. Now, I will not touch cherries or nectarines or apricots, any of the what we call the stone fruits, until late in the spring. And the reason for that is those trees are much more susceptible to late freezes. So when you have that, I will cut back on my pruning to try to preserve as much fruit as possible. And if you prune cherries too early, they tend to desiccate. In other words, they dry out and the buds close to where you made the cuts will die. Mm. So I will do the apples and pears. And of course, ornamentals, like ornamental flowering shrubs and things, as long as they're not flowering early spring, you can get away with going in there and cleaning out any dead material, diseased material. But that's about the extent of what I would do.
Okay, but that, it's always good to get rid of the dead stuff if you haven't yet.
Right, and again, a lot of times what I'm trying to do is push some of the things up so that I don't have so much to do in the spring, because I have a lot of stuff to do.
Right, yeah, spring is always very busy time. Well, it's just being on a farm that's planting harvesting.
It's almost stressful.
Yes, yeah. Okay, well, since it's Christmas, we want to talk about Christmas gifts for gardeners and stocking stuffers.
Yeah. And, you know, gardeners should be making up their list right now. And I have a whole list of stuff that you can get. And some of them, some people might say, oh, I don't think that's such a good gift. But you have to remember, gardeners are different type of people. They're real down-to-earth folks. And if it's something they need, they're going to appreciate it. So I'll start with the stocking stuffers. In our house, we all buy stocking stuffers, and our stockings can't hold them all. So my wife bought baskets to put under there. But I'm the kind of guy that likes scented soaps for Christmas. And people would think, a bar of soap for Christmas? I'd be insulted. But there are a lot of practical things that you can put in a stocking that will be helpful. And one of the things I would suggest is put some packets of seeds in there. And specifically, the All-America selections that we've talked about earlier in programs, you normally can't find the plants in garden centers, so you have to start them yourself. And the award winners for 2020 are already out.
Oh, okay.
So you can, and they, if you go to their website, they'll tell you where you can get the seeds, and they make great stocking stuffers, and it's not something everybody's going to have.
That's a great idea. That is a really great idea mm-hmm. for a gardener.
Another thing is something very simple, a rain gauge. And I like to have rain gauges on my deck, and I like to have them in the garden. And the reason I like rain gauges is it lets you know how much water you're getting on your garden, and that can help you if you're using an irrigation system or even if you're going out there with your watering can. And we talked about this one earlier, a soil thermometer.
Okay.
That'd be a great yeah. little stocking stuffer.
Let me just, about the rain gauges, though, we need to be careful if they're plastic it rains and then it freezes, they can crack them.
Yes, they can.
So you might want to spend a little more money on a better rain gauge.
Well, you don't really need a rain gauge during the winter months. And a lot of times you can take them down easily. Like I had a plastic one that had a mount, and the mount stayed in place.
Right.
And I just take the gauge out and put it back in the garage.
Mm-hmm.
So those are available, and that's what I would suggest you do as mm-hmm. opposed to going for a more expensive one. The plastic ones are just fine.
Right.
They work
very
well.
As long as you make sure it's not freezing and
yeah.
there's water in it.
And I have left a plastic one outside. They get, this one was a flexible plastic.
Oh,
and it
okay.
went through the winter without any trouble.
Okay.
Now, they will last longer if you, put okay, them inside
yeah.
because the freezing and thawing and the exposure of the plastic to mm-hmm. sunlight will cause
yep,
the plastic
yep.
to become brittle sooner.
Yep. Okay. So then, we talked about a soil thermometer. So that's a good idea. I mean, serious gardeners, they need to know these things.
Well, and we've talked about this, but a soil thermometer is really one of the better ways of knowing when to put your seeds in, because mm-hmm. seeds prefer a certain ideal range to germinate. And that's something that every gardener should have in their toolbox.
Right, because in the springtime, even though it could be warm out, it maybe wasn't warm for quite a while, and that mm-hmm. ground is still...
It's still cool, yeah.
Yes, and I know because I've mentioned, my husband has said for, we plant a lot of corn, that the ground needs to be at 55 degrees mm-hmm. or above to get that corn seed growing.
Yeah, yeah. And for sweet corn, it needs to be warmer, especially mm-hmm. the super sweets.
Mm-hmm.
So field corn's tough. I mean, it can come up in cooler temperatures, but...
Right. Yeah, sweet corn's a lot more temperamental.
Yeah, it is. Another thing you can buy is hand pruners or garden scissors. Those are very helpful, or a Swiss Army knife. Now, the reason I like the Swiss Army knife is when you're out there, say, marking the rows off and you're putting string along the rows, you need something to cut with. It has not only a knife, but it also has scissors.
Mm.
And the Swiss Army knife scissors are pretty good scissors, and they come in handy.
So, and you could go anywhere to look for a Swiss Army knife, right?
Oh, yeah. You could find them most hardware stores and camping stores and those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be a Swiss Army knife. There are knockoffs, too, that are a little less expensive, but the Swiss Army knives are really nice. Something as simple as a packets of flower preservation material. It has what's called cytokinins in it. It's about the size of a packet of sugar. And if you want to keep cut flowers lasting longer, you mix this with water, and they will last longer as long as you don't store the flowers near ethylene. And garden gloves is
a good stocking
stuffer. And one of the things that I really like is a farmer's almanac or a plant-based calendar, so you can write all the things that you need to write on there,
mm-hmm.
like when you're going to start seeds, or just a little container of sunscreen.
Oh, good idea.
And so there's so many little things, and you can get little mini hand tools for digging around in pots that can fit into a stocking. So there are lots of things that...
Lots of different stocking stuffers for gardeners.
Oh, yeah, or gardener's hand soap for cleaning your hands. There's special mm-hmm. soaps for that. Or for those who are sensitive to poison ivy, there are special soaps that you can use to wash poison ivy off.
Really?
Like when I go to John Deere to get things for my mower, they sell a little thing that's good for poison ivy and poison oak.
Oh.
So, just look around you. There are lots of cool things that you can put in a stocking for gardeners.
Okay. Now, but what about some bigger gifts. Maybe you really want to please your gardener.
Well, if I would have had more time, I probably would have put these in order of how much they cost.
Oh, okay.
But I didn't do that. So I'm going to jump around a little bit. One of the things I always like is a gift certificate to my favorite garden catalog company or favorite garden center. And it's so if you just don't know what that person wants or needs, a gift certificate to their favorite place, a hydroponic store, for instance, and they can get a whole bunch of things that you might not even think that
right.
they need.
Right, you might not know what this gardener needs or might mm-hmm. want.
There's a store here in Michigan called Ollie's in the Lansing area, and they always have these really cool decorative pots that you can put out on your deck or you know, in the front porch mm-hmm. or something like that. And they might only have one or two of a particular type, but what you could do is if you have a really nice plant, just leave it in the regular pot and just set it right in that decorative pot. So they can make some nice Christmas gifts. Now, that makes me think of something else. If water gets in those pots and it expands, it will crack them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the type of thing that you want to leave out. It's okay if you want to leave it out and turn it upside down. If it's, say, so large mm-hmm. that you can't bring it in. But you don't want to let water crack your pot, so be sure you watch out for that. Another thing is drip hose.
Oh, yeah.
People like to water therapeutically, but when they have a lot to water, it becomes a job. And you can get some drip hose, and then if you want to really be nice, you can buy them a little timer that will allow them to water a section of a garden or a flower bed or something like that. And you can put the timer on and it will water itself.
Well, these are lots of great ideas for things. I mean, I never even thought about a timer.
Mm. And a timer could be really nice. And another thing you could put in a stocking is they have these little connections that you put on your faucet that prevent backflow of anything that's going through the hose. Like if you were fertilizing with a hose on and you turn the water off, you could suck fertilizer back into your line. It's a backflow prevention device. It's very small, and that can fit in a stocking stuffer too. But most people would never think about that.
That's
but
right.
It has a very practical use. Or a nice decorative watering can. Mm. I mean, I like to use the plastic ones that are functional, but every now and then, if you're doing something special, you'd like to have that really nice watering can, like a copper watering can or something like that. Something that's going to last for decades as opposed to...
And just leaving it kind of sit there near, you know, it's kind of pretty.
Yeah, it could look very nice. Or let's say, for instance, any gardener will have pest problems. Mm. And there are all kinds of organic pest control products that they may not even be aware exist. And it's nice you can buy many things on Amazon now that you can't find locally. Mm. And just about any organic pesticide you can think of, you can buy it on Amazon.
So you could get an Amazon card.
An Amazon card, or you can, if they've been complaining about a particular pest, you could find an organic product that's good for that and could be very helpful. Now, if you have a deep pocket, we talked about those fluorescent lights that you need, and I talked about T5 fluorescent lights, and you can get those in banks of 2, 4, 6, and 8, and you can get them up to 4 feet long.
Wow.
And so when you start getting up to the bank of 8, you're talking around $200 or so.
Okay.
But if you want to make a gardener squeal, give them something like that. They're going to be real happy. But they do have smaller ones, too, that can fit under a counter in the kitchen. Mm. So if they wanted to have some herbs on the counter. Mm-hmm. Or you might want to make a little kit for them where they have herb seeds and you have little decorative pots for them. And the little, as we talked about before, the little tools that they could use. And they could start their own little herb garden right there in the kitchen.
This sounds like something might be even good to get a child, to get them in.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, encourage mm-hmm. them to start growing something that they can, even it doesn't have to be during the summertime, like you're saying, herbs mm-hmm. in the winter.
And for children, they have small rakes and small shovels and small hand tools for them. So for a child, if they were showing an interest in gardening, you could buy them some seeds and some hand tools and their own garden gloves and just make it like a little basket of gardening gifts.
Yeah, that was a great idea.
Another thing which most people don't think about is mushroom kits.
Now, what's a mushroom kit?
A mushroom kit is usually a box, and they have oyster mushrooms or the white button mushrooms. And basically, you can have these down in your basement. You don't even need light for this, where you have some basic things to do. Hardly anything has to be done, and then the mushrooms just start growing. Hmm. And you can harvest those mushrooms and eat them fresh. And the nice thing about it, most likely there won't be any bugs in those mushrooms either.
So where would somebody get a mushroom kit?
You have to order them online, like from some of the companies, Burpee and Park. And if you just look for mushroom kits, you'll have a choice of a number of different types.
You know, look up mushroom kits and see. Okay.
That's the nice thing about the internet now. If you can conceive it, you can probably find it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I told my wife the other day, I was making a video, and I always like to have little funny things in the beginning or at the end. And one of the things I was talking about was Moe's Hair Den. And this is make-believe. Where you could get wildebeest wigs and what was it? Bison beards.
Oh my.
And do you know, and there was another one too. I forgot what the animal was. And so I said, let me just look and see. And there was such a thing as a wildebeest wig. I could not believe it.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Oh, the other one was wildebeest wigs and yak stashes.
Oh,
in other
my.
Words,
yeah.
Mustaches made out of yak hair. And
okay.
This stuff is out there.
Yeah. So is there anything else? Because we're running out of time.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff.
Okay.
Well, for instance, a weather radio. And you let me know when we run out of time. A weather radio, which tells you what's coming up, tells you about freezes, tells you about storms coming in, how much rain you're expected to get. That's very helpful to gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
Or if somebody's really interested, especially children, you can buy them a weather station, which they put the anemometer and stuff up on the house or on a pole.
Mm.
And inside, it tells you what the temperature is outside, what the wind speed is, how much rain you've received.
Okay. The barometers?
It has barometers and everything. Yeah. It depends on what kind of set you get, because they can get over $100.
Mm-hmm.
But some people would really like to do that. Or a garden tote would be another one, something that you can put all your tools in and the products that you're going to use.
So one of the best things maybe is get a catalog, like at the beginning of December maybe, or have your garden person, hey, what is something in here you'd like? Circle some of these things.
Well, usually about this time of year, people start giving you hints. Some people actually make a Christmas list, so those are things you can look at. Yeah.
Well, okay, folks, we are out of time, and so we're hoping that we've given you especially some good ideas to buy some gifts for your garden person there, and then learned about Christmas trees and poinsettias. So if you want to contact Gary or look up any of his videos, just go to YouTube and type in Gary, and it's Heilig, H-E-I-L-I-G. And right now you got about 90 videos up there.
I'm approaching 90, yeah.
And he's going to have some more for December here for Christmas. So we're so thankful that you've been listening. And if you ever have any questions, give us a call here at the studio. And we will get in touch with Gary. The number here is 877-278-5512. Or you can even email Tom at strongtowerradio.org and ask him to a question that he can forward on to Gary, and maybe it'll be a topic we will cover the next time we're together. You have a great day, folks, and I pray that you'll have a wonderful holiday season. Bye.